Ichi.
E-G, as
E
in.
no, Ichi, chi. So how about I write it as E-E hyphen C-H-E-E.
Got it. E-G. Thank
Yep.
you.
All right, so Ichi will introduce himself and then you two can get going.
Okay, Troy, thank you.
Yeah, it's recording fine.
Hi, Judy. This is Ichi.
Yes, hi, good morning.
Morning, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for accepting this invitation for an interview.
Oh, you're welcome. It's something I think of quite regularly whenever that period is announced, or when I think of early years at in the UW campus.
Yes. Before we start anything, I'm just wondering if you would like this record to be collected and shared only for educational purpose.
That's just fine.
Okay, and then we are going to send you a release form of this. I'm just wondering, would you prefer sending it to your mailing address or your email?
The email is just fine.
Okay, may I have your email, please, Judy?
Sure. It is JMC
JMC
2535
2535
at Yahoo.
at Yahoo. Okay.
.com.
Great. We will send you the release form after the
Okay, and then
interview.
can I just send it back to by email to you?
Yes.
Okay, sure.
Okay, Judy. I've heard from Troy that you worked in UW Hospital, right?
That's correct.
Would you provide us with a brief chronology how you got into the UW Hospital?
Would you repeat how I did what?
Sorry, I'm wondering, would you provide a chronology of how you enter work, how you be, became a worker at the
Oh,
UW Hospital? What did you do there? Yeah.
of course, I can do that. I started working at UW Hospital after I graduated from nursing school in Eau Claire, and me and several friends from Eau Claire came and we lived in an apartment for seven nurses. And I started working full time, or was working full time for 3, 4 years, I think it was, and then got married and stopped working. And after I kept working. I worked in post-op heart surgery and in the medical school for the cardiology, where they did cardiac catheterizations. So that's what I did for 3, 4 years. And then after I was married, I had my first child, I stopped working for a number of months, and I came back, I believe, summer of 67, after my child was 6 months old, with the understanding I was just going to work very, very part-time, and I chose just to work one day a week. And what happened was I would come to work on that one day a week and report to the nursing office, and they would assign me where they needed help. And the day of Dow, I walked into that building that's on Old University Avenue. Well, it's Campus Drive now. You're aware of the building, I assume. 1300 University Avenue was the university hospital in those days. And so when I walked in on October 17th, I knew there was a very foul odor in the building, and in the lobby, and the nursing office was right off the front lobby. And they said, "There's a demonstration going on." I thought things looked peculiar as I drove into the campus from the far west side. And I can't even remember where I parked. I was trying to think of that today, because you could park on University Avenue in those days. Leave your car for 8 hours. It was weird when I think of that. But anyway, I walked into the nursing office, and I knew I was probably going to have an unusual day from what I could. My senses just told me things were different. And I was assigned. I was working 3 to 11 shifts, so this would have been about 10 to 3 on that day. And so they told me, of course, "Today you will head right to the emergency room. We're having all kinds of commotion there with the demonstrations that is going on." So I didn't really ever view the demonstration, but the way the students and people were on this, even on University Avenue, because I would walk in the front door of University Avenue, people just seemed to be in a different state of mind. It was just, it was evident in the posture of people how that something was indeed wrong.
Oh.
So anyway, I walked in and into the emergency room and quickly was, you know, told this and that and, you know, that what I was going to be doing, and it just all unfolded, and I did what I needed to. And mainly it was assisting with stitching up the lacerations that occurred from the billy clubs that they were using, the police.
Yes.
People. And my memory is of washing tear gas out of eyes, flushing eyes free of that were full of tear gas. I may have that memory mixed up because I also ended up going into the emergency room on two other occasions after a demonstration or a riot. And do you have you anywhere in your information that they used tear gas at Dow?
Yes, they did.
Okay, then
they did use. Yes.
I sometimes get the two or three different times I was sent to the emergency room. It would never fail. I would say, why on my one day a week do I get a demonstration? did Dow? One more question. Did Dow occur on a Wednesday?
It's let me check. It's October 18th.
17th. Okay.
Yes.
October 18th. 1967.
Yes. Wait a sec.
Have you ever come up with a day, or I'm just, it's not important, but.
Oh, no, I am checking that, the day from my computer.
Oh, sure. They can.
Yeah.
Computers can do that, can't we?
Yes, it is a Wednesday. You had a very good memory.
Well, because I had a thought that was the middle, I always worked that one, I just worked the same day every week.
Ah.
And it was Wednesday then, of course, and I almost was sure of that. And it also seemed to me that then I was sent to the emergency room at least twice on two other occasions on Wednesdays.
What
two? Yeah, I worked. And so it seemed to me that the pattern of demonstrations occurred on a Wednesday. We had a number of them over a period of time. After that, Dow was first.
Ah.
Then we went into all the anti-war and all the Vietnam, and then into the TA strikes that were going on and the demonstrations involved. So all of those events kind of blur together in some ways. But Dow was especially amazing because it was the first. And the other part of being in the emergency room, let me go back to being in the facility, the emergency room was quite small in those days, nothing like we see today.
Yes.
And it was all one, basically one huge big room with people that needed to be on carts sitting in chairs, you know, getting their eyes flushed out or their lacerations sewn up. Those were the main injuries we saw. Bruises didn't come through. A couple bruises came through because they were on the head.
Ah, yes.
And they, although we didn't know much about a concussion protocol, they at least did some basic, we would shine a flashlight, you know, in the eyes to make sure the pupils were reacting and were equal. Those are the two neurological things people, any medical person would do if somebody's been hit on the head to see if there is any brain, you know, problem.
Right.
But mostly it was the two things I mentioned. But the other unique thing that I ended up doing a lot of was the phone calls that were coming in to the emergency room, having heard, I don't know, people did call long distance from a pay phone, calling their parents or getting the word out. And then I'd get phone calls coming in from parents and people concerned from all over the place. The hospital had no public relations department, so it was all handled by whoever was in the emergency room.
Oh,
or
so
whoever was on the unit in the hospital working.
I see. So
calls
so
directly. Nothing fielded through any public relations wasn't even
a thing
in anybody's head at
right.
the time. And I thought when I think of this, how amazing that was that I was revealing all this information. We didn't have anything like the HIPAA laws that, you know, prevent talking to people without permission of the patient and all
yeah.
that. None of that existed. Here I am, a 26-year-old nurse, not without a lot of experience, but certainly had been in a nursing program then and working for what amounted to about 9 years, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. But still, not not much background in terms of what I was in the middle of. And it was chaos, as you could imagine. A lot of, you know, crying, and the kids were just terrified and felt brutalized. And
right.
So the emotional level was extraordinary in that everybody in there who was coming in had come through the same experience up on the hill and, you know, by social sciences. If I'm not mistaken, weren't the interviews done at social science on Observatory Drive?
It's actually in the building opposite to the social science building. It's a commercial building.
The what building?
Commerce building.
Commerce building.
Right.
You got it. Thank you. Commerce. Yeah. It was at Commerce.
Yeah, so nowadays it's called Ingraham.
Yes, it's had a name now. Yes. And they all walked in. You know, the emergency room was in the back door of the hospital. And I think it must have been marked for the ambulances, ER, you know.
Okay.
And the students probably all knew where that was simply because they were probably had a tour of the campus when they first arrived on campus. So they all came in the back door. Nobody came in the, you know, and they just walked themselves in, or their friends carried them if they had a leg injury.
Okay.
So that was the state of affairs at the hospital, and it was pretty crazy.
Was that situation unexpected?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, there was some rumble. My husband is retired now, professor in the law school.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was some rumble that there was something brewing, but nobody knew what it was. They kept it pretty under wraps as far as I or he knew, because we thought about that we, you know, I know there was a lot of discussion around the campus that should Dow be allowed to come here in the middle of this war that so many people were already getting very antagonized by nationally, and of course here in Madison was as reflective as any place in the country.
Yes.
For that antagonism.
And
well, there was, people knew there had some, you know, not very substantiated as far as I knew or we knew, idea that there was going to be something happening, but of course it was well planned and had been in the planning stage, I suppose, because Dow had its date way ahead of time.
Right.
To come interview. So certainly it was planned out, but it was kept pretty quiet just because they wanted the secrecy effect of, you know, the attack on them to shut it down. I think, you know, I don't know all the details of what kind of, you probably already have gotten that from other people, but how much the university tried to close it down or prevent it. I don't know anything about that. If faculty knew, the law school only knew that there was something brewing. But law students were not very, very social conscious in those days. They were more getting their law degrees to get a job that they could make a lot of money. They weren't as socially conscious. I mean, they weren't going to law school in those days, at least,
yeah,
to make a contribution that might make a difference to the world, as many students nowadays do have that in their thought process. The law school was a place to get an advanced degree in 3 years without a whole lot of uncertainty as how long it would take them, because 3 years was it, and then to make money,
mm-hmm.
not to do so. I don't think reason I say all that, I don't think any law students were involved in planning this thing. I could well be wrong, but so it was probably less known, the fact that this demonstration was going to happen was probably less known at the law school.
Yeah, you are probably right, because as soon as, as far as now, there was only one law student who actually got involved.
Okay, that's interesting.
In that, and she also revealed that general indifference.
Yeah.
Towards that among her peers.
Sure, it was much more, you know, in the social sciences and political sciences.
Yes, like history, journalism.
So, you know, what I just told you, I've not even discussed with my husband for years, but that's my memory. I just remember that was the thinking at the law school, you know, get that law degree so you can get out and get a good job. so there wasn't... That was not a hotbed of activism, although my husband had trouble getting in and out of the law school because of, you know, there were around there. That was more during the other riots, I guess. That wasn't as much to do with Dow. Dow had most of its presence right at Commerce.
Okay, sorry. Sorry for interruption. Was your husband a law student back then?
He was a professor.
Oh, he was already a professor.
Yes. He was teaching. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He had just come back. He came back to teach in '63.
Ah.
So he was teaching then. This was his fourth year of teaching. Yeah.
Okay.
So he was still fairly new, and I don't even know if he had become tenured yet. I don't think he had.
Okay. I see.
He got a few years later. But then he was taken from the law school after Dow. They had no legal department in the university to protect the university or to defend the university.
Oh, interesting.
And so he was taken from the faculty at a little later date to assist the chancellor in legal affairs. So he worked under Ed Young part-time and taught part-time.
Ah, I see. Yeah, I do remember there was a committee set up after the event.
Yep.
And then at
that time of Dow, he was actually on a more or less a sabbatical from the law school. I think about it. He was down, he was assistant attorney general to Bronson La Follette.
Uh-huh.
Bronson La Follette had been his classmate in law school. And so when Bronson became attorney general, tapped Arlen for his deputy. So he was not only, but he continued to teach a 7:45 class and then spend the rest of the day downtown. So he, in the Attorney General's office. And so what happened was they had put together a clinical program at the Attorney General's office of three law students. They were senior law students. Jeff Bartel was one of them. And he and the other, three or four students, came into Bronson La Follette's office to tell them what was going on on campus, that this demonstration and riot, as it turned out to be, was happening, and that Bronson ought to get involved and do something right now. And I can't remember where that went from there.
Mm.
But the Attorney's General's office did get involved at some level, and I'd have to have that conversation with my husband again about what actually Bronson La Follette did.
Okay.
But I can't be clear enough. I just know that Arlen remembers these students coming in to the AG's office in kind of a, you know, panicky mode and saying, oh, you won't believe what's going on, you know, on Bascom Hill and Commerce and this craziness is going on. But anyway, I guess I kind of rambled from my personal experience, which was in the emergency room at the old hospital.
No, those are very invaluable witness of the for example, like the injury. And I would like to further inquire, did you see many police officer also wounded and sent to the emergency room?
That's a good question. I have no memory of seeing anybody in uniform in that emergency room.
Mm.
Whether they were there or not, I don't know.
Okay.
I would have thought that would have stuck out in my memory. All I can remember is the students.
Okay.
In various states of hysteria, and it was chaos. I mean, it was like probably, you know, it was chaotic, and everybody was pushing to get ahead, you know, to get their problem taken care of, whatever it was. And they really didn't have a lot of staff in there. I mean, the emergency room wasn't staffed like it is now. It's, you know, emergency medicine didn't exist. It was just run by medical doctors who had no emergency training, really. You know, now it's a separate discipline, emergency medicine.
I don't believe
that had. It was just, for the most part, men, guys, medical students or medical, I suppose, coming out of medical school who wanted to do emergency room medicine.
I see.
But
yeah.
I'm sure there was no preparation for that. But getting back to the only men I can think of were all in white coats. So they were all working. But there weren't many workers. And it was crazy. I mean, this kept going on until I went off at 11 o'clock. I mean, we were continuing well into the evening, taking care of these injuries.
Right, because there were many injured students.
And too few to help them.
Right, too few to help them.
We weren't prepared. The campus just had never had anything like this.
Yeah.
And there was no thought ever in planning for something like this. Of course, we, as the years went on, as we talked about, because I think I was called into the emergency room. It was really funny because when I'd come on Wednesday, first thing I do is take a big sniff to see if I could smell tear gas, because if I smelled tear gas, I knew exactly what my day's work was going to be, evening's work was going to be. I hardly needed to stop in the nursing office where I was usually assigned. But anyway, it became kind of not a joke, because there was nothing funny about it. But when I think of it this many years later, I kind of chuckle thinking I used my nose to know where I was going to be working.
Right. And how would you describe, what did you think of the first occurrence of, we would say, violence on campus at that time?
I was horrified.
Okay.
I really found it unbelievable that kind of damage should have occurred to human beings for just demonstrating.
I see.
I was horrified at the level of violence.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not. It's very interesting that you asked that question about any policeman. I didn't personally care for any policeman. And I don't remember seeing anybody, and they would still be partially in uniform anyway, but at least they would have maybe taken off their jackets if they had a bleeding situation. But I just don't remember witnessing any police officer in that emergency room.
Right. And you said that there was only one emergency room.
Just the one?
Yes.
And it's funny how the recall is not always real accurate, but the intensity of what I saw is very clear in my mind. I think I could take a paintbrush out and recreate that picture, because it was so, my eyes were popping over the whole thing while I was working.
Yeah.
Basically, and doing, trying to stay calm and to try to not add to the chaos that was already there. That was one of the main things I tried to do, was to calm people that they were going to be just fine, and we were going to make sure they got, the care they needed and walk out whole again.
Yes.
Quite a few stitches to come back and remove in 5, 6 or whatever days they were supposed to come back.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, to try to manage and try to work to keep the place as calm as it could be. I don't believe the subsequent riots were quite as dramatic, because we were, I'm afraid, getting used to this happening.
Yes.
And that's hard to believe. But once, when a first thing happens that you've never seen before, and I don't know what the emergency room records are on that, if any of this is documented. But to my knowledge, I'd lived in Madison only since '62.
Uh huh.
So for 5 years, and I certainly had never known of any other demonstration.
No, yeah. It's probably the first.
Kind of need to go to the hospital.
Right. And
it was new to all of us. And, we had Methodist Hospital at the time,
uh-huh.
No longer here, off of East or West Wash, and Meritor and St. Mary's. But they were all, enough of a distance and I don't know that we sent any of our people over there. I don't recall making any decisions about that.
Okay.
Just because they'd have to find a way to get there.
Yes, and it's kind of far away.
And it's kind of far away when you're injured.
Right.
So
exactly.
They were with a friend, but everybody, these were basically, I think, well, I don't know if they were basically undergraduates or not, because then, we went from all the anti-war years after Dow and then anti-war years to then the TA strike, which was mostly graduate students. And so there were demonstrations and violence through all of that kind of thing. I mean, it's sometimes a little hard to sort out who and what happened when.
Yes.
But these, I think, mostly were undergraduates. But
mm-hmm.
I don't know that for sure.
Yeah, mostly based on our record.
Are you finding that in your, if they were undergraduates?
Yes. Indeed, most of the second DAO demonstration were made up. The participants were majority undergraduates.
Yeah, that's my memory as well. And and then I think as the anti-war years and demonstrations specifically for that, this was related to war, of course, DAO, but it had a little a different direction just because it was hiring for DAO, who was very implicit in the war
Right.
stuff. Well, you know that. So I think then more graduate students probably got involved in the other anti-war years.
Yeah, but the demonstration, well, the organizers involved some graduate students, and
Okay.
also they appeared on the scene, and I believe I'm not sure, but some of the leaders were arrested. Yeah, that's the
So
demographic
we're,
situation.
so you did find out who organized some of the people who organized it.
Yes, and
Don't have any memory of that at all. You know, my memory in that chaotic emergency room, if I had any memory of all the things I read afterwards, for me, the visual of having experienced what I did kind of, you know, overrode everything else I read. I'm a
Right.
visual learner, and that was pretty visual.
Yes.
With you know the blood and the mess from the tear gas and people were not able to see and you know it was pretty and hard to get even get there some of them because their eyes were so what's the word compromised.
Compromise, yeah. How did you help them to recover the vision?
Well, we flushed using water.
Oh, okay.
I don't believe we used any other medication or even probably water that had some salt, some saline, we would call it.
Okay.
There's a procedure for flushing eyes that most every medical person has some experience with it, especially in emergency room work, you know, from other causes. But so eye flushing is, you know, something that was done pretty regularly. And that's that then would their vision would be fine after it was burning them, so you know, tear gas burned so terribly. So they
Right.
were having a lot of pain as well as no vision.
I'm just wondering how this event impact your later so first your professional life, like did you and your colleagues learn something technically from this event, or yeah?
Well, I think because I wasn't really a staff of the emergency room,
Yes.
I was not involved, you know, and I was only working, I only continued to work a day a week because then we had a second child. We, you know, were building our family.
Yes.
So I didn't remain involved in any planning for the future that
Yes.
they must have had,
Okay.
given how unorganized this first one was. But then when I went back, you know, and did have a couple other emergency room experiences, as I mentioned earlier, for just any of the anti-war stuff that was going on often on Wednesdays, it all seemed to go. First of all, I was used to having gone through the first one, and everybody was much more, and I'm sure there had been some discussion of protocol that must have gone on, because the succession ones that succeeded weren't near as visual for me. I mean, they were more calm, and people knew what they were doing much more and how to triage. You know, that is a word we didn't hardly use in those days. And
Yeah, what's triage?
the word triage is to treat the ones that are the worst, you know, and sort out people. And that's what they use in the military to triage.
Ah, I
For
see.
any kind of now emergency, you use that word where it's a more organized attempt to treat people. It
Okay.
is thought out and, you know, who gets the first attention versus, you know, how to handle it and make it go more smoothly.
Okay, so those were things you saw that had
I think
changed,
that developed, you know,
developed.
in that emergency room after Dow.
After the
So it made for the then the following anti-war protests, where people also came in the same way with billy clubs and injuries. And I think there were less billy clubs used, you know. That was very controversial, that the police would use billy clubs and cause amount of body damage. Tear gas, we, you know, felt was not near as, it would stop things but not leave such body damage as
right.
billy clubs were. And I think Ralph Hansen was the police chief for the university.
Yes, you are right.
You know that well, and we became really good friends of his, and spent time talking with, you know, to him about what. But the problem was when they brought in cops from outside of even, you know, greater Dane County, which
yeah.
we had to do from time to time, who hadn't been educated about the use of billy clubs and weren't comfortable themselves, you know, in this kind of thing. And they didn't get to all of the police departments because things came down so fast in those years. There was just one thing after another. But Ralph Hansen was the one that he had trained his University of Wisconsin police department people much
yes.
better before Dow happened. But it was the other cops when they called those in for help, that even the city police.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible. But the University of Wisconsin Police Department was prepared more for crowd control.
Right.
For, you know, just by the nature of the numbers, even though I suppose by then the university, what, was about 20,000 people maybe? Students, I mean?
Oh, sorry. I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no idea either. Right? The numbers were not what they are today. They were much less. But
right.
he ran a very good police department. And it was, you know, nationally, he got national attention for what he accomplished here with demonstrations, which were going on all over the country in not many years after Dow.
I see. So, yeah, I guess he didn't have much control over the city police because they were not his men, right?
Yep, they were, you know, there was a lot of, I think, there was really animosity.
Yes.
And border problems, you know, where does the university end and the city begin? And the city police were really in a bad state of
management, yeah.
Management, oh yeah, that was not good at all. But
and
they, I think, finally were willing to listen to Ralph Hansen and take some of his advice and learn from him, but they were really resistant. And they were, the border thing, they had to, you know, that was so crazy because you know, some of this spilled out into the city streets, of course, and who had control there, the university or the city? And that conflict was, as I recall from just reading and knowing Ralph Hansen like I did, that was a real problem and had to be kind of in a bargaining and a negotiation. Ralph was very good at negotiating.
Yes.
And he policed from his head more and his heart. More than his, you know, and he had a heart and soul about his police work that was pretty remarkable for the day.
Mm-hmm.
But then we got a change in the city police department based, I think, on the Ralph Hansen model. Much more, you know, I think Cooper was the one that came in as a city police chief who had a degree in psychology, and it changed the city police immensely. More of the model that Ralph Hansen had done with the university police.
I see.
But none of that was going on at the time of Dow, for sure. And the city police, they were, their idea was just to, you know, injure these people enough so that they would, you know, stop demonstrating.
Yes.
Or so it seemed. Where I don't even know if the campus police used billy clubs. I don't know. I can't be sure of that memory.
Yeah, it seems from evidence we have, it's all city police used the billy clubs.
They had the billy clubs.
Yep.
I don't think the city the campus had billy clubs. I can't even imagine saying that word now. It's like a foreign word. Nobody uses that term, billy club. But it was certainly a term we used back then. And it was effective. I mean, it really was, but it was terrible.
Right.
It was archaic.
Okay. Our, Judy, our last question will be, how would you say the campus activism in general
impacts
you as a citizen of this country?
That's a very good question. You know, I was kind of apolitical.
Yes.
Until I married a law professor, and I hadn't even had a political science class in my nursing curriculum. And
interesting.
I think that's about the time I joined the League of Women Voters.
Okay.
Because I felt I really need to know more and learn more, and yet I was a mother of two young children. Within another year, we had a second child after Dow, and but I really much more became interested in that kind of thing, and I became quite a liberal person.
Okay.
Coming from Republican family up in northern Wisconsin, my politics were definitely much more liberal and social conscious. I think as a nurse, while my nursing curriculum, probably my first eyes were open when I worked. I had to do my pediatric rotation, we called it, at Milwaukee Children's Hospital in Milwaukee for 3 months. And just that period of 3 months was the first time I ever took care of Native African Americans. We had no African Americans in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, or here to speak of that I ever took care of as patients. But I became very concerned about people's equality and just had a much more world view.
Yes.
And Dow was a very big part of the beginning of that for myself.
I see.
It's hard to separate what influenced what, but I certainly was going much more in the direction of social justice. And I was so appalled by what I saw and the injuries on these kids and students who were not much younger than I was, some of them, that it just seemed so terribly unnecessary. And why can't we work things out more by negotiation and discussion rather than violence? So I became much more, although I'd been concerned about Vietnam, and much more concerned as those years went on into certainly getting closer to the 70s. So yeah, it had a I became much more of a world citizen.
In that sense, okay.
In that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And injustice.
Yeah.
I never really thought about that, but it was very formative for me. I think the visual of seeing what I saw, most of which should have been so unnecessary.
Yeah.
And damaging human beings for what seemed like no reason at all, and I didn't know much about the First Amendment, but these students were, you know, just really exercising their First Amendment rights to be against something, and the cops are what stirred it up. When they called in the city police, I think the sheer numbers made the university call in the city police, and that was probably a big mistake.
What do you mean?
To call in the city police and not...
Oh, yeah. To call us. Okay.
I think the sheer numbers... Do you have any facts of the sheer numbers of students that were involved?
Unfortunately, I do not. But
curious.
Troy might has. But yeah, at first, UW police was way outnumbered by the students. That's how far I can tell you.
That the UW
police was far outnumbered by the students. So students were. Because English is not my first language, I'm just wondering how to say that. So basically, many more students than police at the first occurrence. Then the school police cooperated with the city police to bring more men to control the situation, and then that led to the violence.
Yeah, I think everybody was learning on the job that day. except I think the university police had some crowd control and ways of handling things. If they had enough numbers, I have no idea what the number in the UW Police Department was, but it was probably not very big. Simply because the university...
No, it's not big. Yeah.
You know, I would think the university was probably half the size as it is now.
Half the size?
Yeah. You know, we're talking 44,000.
Right.
And plus all the, you know, professors and all the workers and everything. I mean, that's a fair-sized community. And I would think it's probably half that now. Or it was half that then. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. All right, Judy, thanks a lot for the interview. And I'm just wondering, could you send us a scan picture of you anytime? Yeah, because if you would like, we want to add you to our collection of the photos of the interviewees.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Where would I send that? Or just send it on, you know, I'm not very good on the computer. One of my kids maybe can help me.
Yeah, sure. So the email address, which is Choi, I can tell you right now.
Let me get my pencil out here.
Yeah.
And write that down, because I don't think he left that. Just a minute. I'm having trouble finding one. Oh, there's one. Okay, go ahead.
So all in lowercase.
Okay.
Troy.
Mm-hmm.
Dot.
Spell.
Yeah.
What's his last name?
R-E-E-V-E-S.
Reeves?
Reeves. R-E-E-V-E-S.
V-E-N.
V-E-S-S.
V-E-S?
Yes.
Okay. R-E-E-V-E-S. Okay.
Correct.
So it's Troy, R-E-E-V-E-S, okay?
Yes, and there is a dot between his first name and last name.
So Troy dot.
Yes.
Reeves, okay?
At... WISC dot edu.
Dot edu. Everybody is dot WISEDU. Not WIC, WIS, right?
WISC.
EDU.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's your email. Okay.
Yeah. Troy dot Reeves.
Email to come with that waiver.
Yes. Oh, sorry. What's your question again?
Oh, you were going to send me an email to sign the waiver?
Yes.
Yeah.
We will.
I'll see the email there, too.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Judy.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Have a good day.
And good luck with your project.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.